A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Out here in Cannes, you're listening to another of these Little White Lies daily updates. It's Michael Leader here, and I'm joined today by Little White Lies contributor Sophie Monks Kaufman.
Bonjour, Michael Leader.
How are you doing?
Very well. Yeah, I've crossed through the threshold of sleep deprivation. I'm now content existing in a slight state of mania and can perform very well
I quite liked what you said on Twitter overnight about how Cannes is essentially a bunch of sleep-deprived people trying to pass judgment on art.
It's hilarious because no one's really in any fit state, but we all know that that's the whole reason we're here. So everyone tries their level best to make sense with varying degrees of success.
Well, Sophie, you're very welcome. And I think to start with a bit of follow on from last episode, we had a tweet, so the Little White Lies account, from Hilary Beauvais, saying a huge fan of the podcast, but was pointing out the sort of dearth of female perspectives on the Lars von Trier film that played in Cannes just yesterday morning. And actually, Sophie, you wrote the review for Little White Lies online of The House That Jack Built. So do you think you've said everything you say in that review? Should you point people in that direction?
Yeah. I think that was the most difficult review I've had to write all festival, because it's not a straightforward film at all, insofar as its images are incredibly provocative, but in a way I think they're a huge MacGuffin. So as to avoid going down that giant rabbit hole, I would simply encourage listeners to head to the Little White Lies website and read my review.
Yes. Well, instead we could probably talk about just some canecdotes, if you will.
Gold.
Any tales from the Croisette from you, Sophie?
Okay, so, I mean, my favourite story is secondhand. So something that's like a low-key annoyance here in Cannes is like when people get their phones out during screening. But one guy did something sitting beside David Ehrlich, the critic David Ehrlich, that David Ehrlich told me about, which is to say he got his phone out and began trying to Shazam the film's soundtrack.
Oh, mid-film.
Yeah, just a good minute of trying to Shazam it, which, besides the etiquette matter, that information is not going to be on Shazam. This is the world premiere of the film. I think that's a very good illustrative anecdote of how people might associate Cannes with top professionals, but they're a little babies in the international film journal community, for sure.
And the cause of whether to ban mobile phones in cinemas, that's a worldwide cause, wherever you come from. It's not just your local Odeon.
Yeah.
It's also here.
At the Palais de Festival.
Exactly, yeah, gosh. And what else have you been up to in Cannes here? Are you doing reports, interviews, features?
Yeah, I've been doing quite a mixed bag of things because I'm actually covering for 3 outlets and someone reached out to me today, so possibly a 4th outlet is going into that mix. So yeah, I've been doing interviews. A real highlight for me of Cannes was interviewing Lucas Daunt, the 26-year-old dreamy virgin director of Girl, which is one of the great discoveries of the festival and should have played in competition, but did not. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the great discoveries of the festival. And as I was interviewing him, it's his debut feature, but I think the reason it's so compelling is it's been with him for 9 years, he's been working on it for 4 years, and it's been very well received here. And in the middle of our interview, this guy came over and handed him a copy of Le Figaro, the French newspaper, with him on the front cover.
Wow.
And he just lost it. So that was a very nice moment to watch a young man on the make, about to be established, just literally staring himself in the face in print.
Oh, and that's something that is actually quite pure about the Cannes experience, is there are careers being made here. It's not just all about provocations and bad boys having 2,000 people having to watch their film.
Exactly, and that's a really good point, because I think it kind of has the best and worst, and you can get really low, bogged down in all the, I guess, bullshit, because there is a lot of bullshit here. And then, oh, I'm going to get bleeped again, but then the palate cleanser comes in the moment you discover a film, and it's, if you're a cinephile, it's the purest thrill.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And I suppose one of the cinephile thrills was a film we saw, which we are still percolating, I think.
Indeed.
I don't know about you. So the film was Under the Silver Lake. David Robert Mitchell playing in competition. He's made two films before, The Myth of the American Sleepover and It Follows, which was the art house horror film of 2015, 2014. This film, where to start with it? I guess top line synopsis, it's Andrew Garfield as a sort of deadbeat chap living in a flat in Los Angeles who meets a girl, Riley Keough, and she disappears overnight and he becomes embroiled in the mystery around where she may have gone. And in the process comes into all sorts of conspiracy thrills or urban legends or his own private obsessions. Does that sound about right, Sophie?
I think you've done a stand-up job of bringing together all the disparate elements. And I think one reason why you are hesitant in describing it is because it's a very textured film.
Mm-hmm.
And there are long stretches of the film where you're not sure what is instrumental and what is decorative.
Mm-hmm.
Like the level of the artwork, just even tiny details, like Andrew Garfield's character ends up with this little hobo guide.
Mm-hmm.
And all the there's lots of symbols. There are lots of items in this world. They lead to other items. So there's this whole level of visual language.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there were long stretches of it where it's kind of lost under the surface of the Silver Lake.
2.5 hour long Shaggy Dog story. Some people are expecting it to be like Inherent Vice or The Big Lebowski, but it's got its whole own sort of timbre, hasn't it? You say it's very textured. It's also very textual.
Mm.
It would not be a spoiler to say how much it goes down the rabbit hole of popular culture, looking at the signs and signifiers within it, and then busts open some of these narratives, these meta-narratives that bind together, maybe you could say it as the straight white male experience, the entitlement within which, maybe. But it was, I found it such a perplexing film. You know the Twitter meme that is from, I think, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where it's, I forgot the name of the actor, but he's in front of this pin board of all sorts of, you know, whatever, his little pictures. He's clearly have got some scheme going, and it's become this ongoing meme about fandom or obsessive interest in things. That is this film, in a way.
That's a really good description of it, and it's, in a way, it's like, it keeps on going to you. This is a character looking at all these cultural artifacts for a deeper meaning. Meanwhile, there are you, watching this pop culture artifact, looking for a deeper meaning. So it's, yeah, like you say, it's very, very meta. And like he did with It Follows, what you couldn't quite place what era it was set in.
Mm-hmm.
With this, it seems so 70s, yet people have smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
It is very reminiscent of Inherent Vice, except it's somehow more streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it is a Shaggy Dog, it's like it's got more resolution and I'd say fewer blind alleys. And there's this whole like bait and switch thing going on in terms of what it's really about.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. And very hard to really even trace the outlines of what it may be without leading into spoiler territory. But it's certainly one that, gosh, I'm really interested in seeing again.
Same.
Just to figure it all out. I now need to go away and write 500 words on it.
Yeah.
Already it's proven to be quite a hard task.
Well, may I give you some advice?
Go on, Sophie.
As someone who, shout out to Diamantino, which is one of my favourite films at the festival, and that's a film which is very different, but very similar in that there's so much going on, and how do you even begin to go into it? I would recommend, instead of trying to evoke or describe it, describe what it's doing that's different to a lot of films are doing. And that way you don't have to try and make sense of it all, because in a way, everyone's going to have to do that themselves when they watch it. But I'd say another thing that makes it different to Inherent Vice, which it is very similar to in a lot of ways, is I found myself very disorientated in that kind of like stoner world. This, I love being in this world. It is very kind of smooth in a way. And Andrew Garfield does extraordinary work as a character who is mainly tasked with just watching others mm-hmm. and looking at things rather than having any big demonstrative scenes. He's kind of in a daze.
His most demonstrative scenes are circling things in Sharpie pens.
Exactly. Yeah. This is climaxes.
Yes, exactly. I think let's leave the Silver Lake. Let's dry ourselves off and look at other films. What are any other highlights you'd want to mention, Sophie? From your entire span of Cannes.
From my entire span of Cannes. My top four are Diamantino, then that's a Portuguese film mm-hmm. directed by Gabriel Abrantes and Daniel Schmidt. Then I adored Ashes Purest White by Zhao Zhenke. Yeah. And I just mentioned the power of Andrew Garfield's performance. Ashes Purest White is Zhao Tao. She inspired me to go away and just think about acting and think about what makes a great actress, just so that I could develop the vocabulary to describe the impact she had on me. And I think it comes down to a kind of almost willingness to be on screen without saying anything, like to see a character and for them to, you can see them thinking and you don't know what they're going to do and you don't know what they're going to say. But I also think that great actors, they're channeling something of their knowledge. Mm. And she scans such a wise, soulful, vulnerable presence. And each moment watching her just feels like communing with something very special. So Ashes Purest White was an extreme highlight for me for that reason. Mm-hmm. Were you a big fan of that?
I was as well. And also, I don't really know many of Zhao Zhenke's films. I was on the podcast a few months ago reviewing Mountains Made Apart, which is my first viewing experience of him. And Zhao Tao is astonishing in that as well. And I quite like coming to Cannes and then coming back with some homework.
Right. Well, I think you and I have planned a Zhao marathon.
Exactly.
Because she's been in 14 of his films. Because she is
14, really?
Yeah, I think some of those are shorts. But, you know, she's his muse. Mm-hmm. And I really like it when you realise, like the term auteur is very often applied to directors, so often that people think that is who it means. But no, it applies to anyone creative, and I think it showed, like, she is an auteur, mm-hmm. and they are two auteurs working together, and together they just create something that is magical.
Well, that's going to be our next project, I think. What are the other two? You said you had a top four.
Okay, yeah. So, Girl by Lucas Daunt, which I think I already
kind of
described a bit.
But it really is the discovery of the festival.
And then Rewind all the way back to the very first director's Fortnite film, Birds of Passage, which is the Colombian dawn of the drug trade movie that is also a serene, traditional portrait of a lost way of life. It just brings together so many things to do with the world, as well as being beautiful to watch. So what I really look for is something that's kind of expansive but also enjoyable, and Birds of Passage. Mwah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
the last film I watched before Silver Lake, which I will just make mention to, even though it's not one of my highlights, was Solo, A Star Wars Story, directed by Ron Howard, the new Star Wars prequel about Han Solo's younger years. A film that people were quite intrigued by, because not only is it the first Star Wars prequel where they're recasting characters, famous characters, Han Solo famously played by Harrison Ford, of course, but they also replaced directors mid-production. The shoot was already underway with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who made the Jump Street movies, and then they weren't getting on, and due to creative differences, they replaced them with the very safe hands of Ron Howard. And
so safe.
Very safe. The film is a film. It's fine. It's enjoyable, very, very adventurous and thrilling in its own way, but it's, for me, the first one of these films that feels like product, where it's colouring in and delivering fan service and little nods and little references in a way that I don't really want from these films. I want to be given something new. And it's almost the flip side of The Last Jedi, which really remixes what you know or wrong-foots you into telling you new stories or new configurations of old stories and pointing towards a future that can be free of the expectations of a Star Wars franchise. This one is very much to the point where you're finding out how Han Solo got his gun, or how Han Solo met Lando and Chewbacca, or the Kessel Run, which is a passing mention in Star Wars about him being a famed pilot because he made the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. You find out what that is in this film.
So it's like a nerd's glossary.
It is, but I'd like to think that I'm quite a nerd about these things, and it didn't really do much for me.
Didn't hit your nerd spot. No nerdgasms.
No nerdgasms in this one. Yes, but that's Solo, and I believe Adam Woodward for The Thwart Lies is currently writing up his review. That will be on the website shortly, I believe. But Sophie, anything else about Cannes before we sign off?
Well, yes. So I don't believe on this podcast we've as yet mentioned the protest that took place.
Yes, of course.
So this was just before one of the three films by a woman in competition played, Eva Hassan's Women of the Sun. Mm-hmm. Before it, 82 women from the industry took to the red carpet. The president of the jury, Cate Blanchett, read out a speech, which you can easily find online. And she was tag-teaming it with Agnès Varda, mm-hmm. who was reading it in French. And it was beautiful to behold because of the tenderness between them and the sight gag of their height difference. But anyway, that's a very superficial aside. So the reason there were 82 of them is because this is the 71st Cannes Film Festival. In the 71 years since it's been running, there have been only 82 films directed by women in competition. And for contrast, there have been 1,727 films directed by men in competition. Mm-hmm. And the protest was organised by this French organisation called 50-50 by 2020. And I would recommend looking at their website for a year-on-year breakdown, which really brings home the discrepancy. I would say, though, it was a very surreal thing to witness, because Thierry Frémaux, the head programmer of Cannes, who is responsible for how many films get programmed by men or women in competition, was there effectively protesting himself. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something very strange here at Cannes at the moment, where, because they have pledged to try and address this discrepancy, but they're just not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And so you see these signs of hypocrisy everywhere. So I think this is an interesting year, because I'm hoping to write a more detailed piece about this, actually. I think I just got commissioned today to do it, to look at the state of Cannes' mm-hmm. identity. But it was very moving, the 82 women protest, but just because of the numbers in and of themselves tell a story. But in terms of how it went down and how much it is actually meaningful, I think we need to continue questioning and scrutinising the ideology at play here.
It has to be unilateral as well, doesn't it? Because there seems to be so much almost blame shifting, where, you know, as you say, you know, programmers may say, oh, we don't have films. Producers say we don't have the projects. Or, you know, it really has to be everybody pushing forward. Critics may say the films aren't programmed, so how, you know, if they're not in competition, how can we not see them, etc. So we have to really do the work, all of us.
We do, it's true. You're right. And it just requires some of us to stop passing the buck and to stand up, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It's weaselly to, like, everyone's always got a million reasons for doing the decisions they make and doing what mm-hmm. they do. So, of course, you can cite all these other forces, but if you want to do something, you can do it.
Yeah.
And it just needs to be made more of a priority by people across the industry, as you say.
Well, That's hopefully a seed of discourse for future
articles,
podcast discussions.
Exactly, that's it, that's it. Yeah, we need to even change the way we're writing about films and covering films and being less deferent. Because I think the thing is, for me, the most annoying or troubling aspect of the Cannes atmosphere is this is the festival and it knows it. And it's, in a way, it's... there are so many ways it tells you as journalists you are lucky to be here. Mm-hmm. And some journalists, they drink that down and they won't question the programming tastes or anything like this. And we need to just take the festival off its pedestal and just look at it and subject it to the kind of rigorous journalistic analysis that you would any other festival.
Yeah, and we should. So Sophie, that this piece may be brewing, but where else can we see what else you're writing?
So I am providing dispatch for Huck magazine, which is Little White Lies' sister magazine. And I have been briefed to cover films by underdogs, by marginalised people, films that might deal with wanderlust or something like this. So I have quite a specific brief. So far I've sent two dispatches and I've got two interviews in the chamber to also go up during the festival.
I'm currently writing some sight and sound reviews and I think actually I'm covering an anime film for Little White Lies. Is this film Mirai, which I think I mentioned on a previous episode of the podcast, this time-bending sci-fi fable where a young boy is concerned and anxious about the birth of his baby sister, but then through some sort of timey-wimey business, he's able to meet his younger baby sister as an older woman or as an older girl, and they have a connection, and he can see the woman she's going to be. And it sounds really, really delightful if it all comes together. What are you seeing next, Sophie?
So I am next seeing an Uncertain Regard film called Sophia. And it's directed by a woman called Miriam Benham-Barak. And it's set in Casablanca in Morocco. And it's about a woman who has pregnancy denial. So she's pregnant, but in denial about it. So I'll be covering that for Huck, because that's some of my good underdog content.
Yeah.
And then later on, I think we're all going to see Burning.
Burning, Korean film.
Yes.
Yeah. That should be, hopefully, something special.
Mm.
Well, Sophie, thank you for joining me on this podcast.
It was my consummate pleasure, Michael. Mon plaisir.
Oh, thank you. And I think David and Adam are going to be back another day for a more of a roundup pod. But for now, thank you for joining us. You can get in touch with us over on Twitter, LWLies. Or email us at truthandmovies@tcolondon.com.
And you can follow Michael and I on Twitter for those good takes. We never do bad takes, that's the thing about us.
You are so far so good.
Yes.
A pun on Sophie, that's S-O-P-H-A-R, so good.
And you are, I believe, at Michael J. Leader.
Michael J. Leader, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for the plug, Sophie.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, and thank you for listening, everyone. This has been a 7 Digital production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.